Welcome back to the program. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Emily Scarlett. It's supposed to be a holly jolly time of year, but let's face it, if you don't have the funds to play Santa, it can be a little uncomfortable. A new survey finding that over 60% of people list a lack of money as the top cause of holiday stress. Over 40% say the pressures of gift giving is another major stressor. How can you make this weekend an enjoyable one, even on a small budget? Well, let's talk about it. I'm joined by pioneering neuropsychologist Rick Hansen. Rick, welcome to the program.
Hi, great pleasure to be here.
Now, Rick, you're the author of the new book, Just One Thing, Developing a Buddha Brain, One Simple Practice at a Time. I'm guessing Buddha would not have been very interested in an iPad 2 or an Xbox 360. Although that seems to be what it takes nowadays to make people happy during the holidays. How are we supposed to overcome these materialistic demands in our culture?
That's a great question. Well, two parts. First, what I mean by a Buddha brain is a brain that, building on the original meaning of the word Buddha, is a brain that deeply knows how to be truly happy, strong, and loving and wise. And so we all have a human brain. We don't have a Buddhist brain or an atheist brain or a Christian brain, what have you. We have a human brain. And we can all, literally, using self-directed neuroplasticity, in other words, using thoughts to change the brain, we can build up a better brain, you know, one synapse at a time. And that's what my book's about, 52 Little Practices for Using the Mind Alone, based in science, to change the brain for the better in really down-to-earth, simple, you know, background kind of ways. The second point to what you just said there about materialism and consumerism, yeah, you know, the Buddha, as well as many others, have pointed out that if we get driven and intense and craving toward what we want, we create suffering and harm for ourselves and others. But it's interesting just to think about it. One of the practices in the book you're making me think about is called Aspire Without Attachment, the idea of, you know, pursue what we like, but hold our likes lightly and without tipping into a drivenness around it. And I go into a lot of ways how to do that.
In terms of the holiday time, you're supposed to be happy during this time. It involves a lot of times big family gatherings that can have all kinds of stressors. How is a person supposed to go through this period with at least the limited amount of stress, or trying to limit the amount of stress they feel mentally?
Oh, I think it's important to take action, first of all, and to realize that, you know, the same circuits that evolved millions of years ago to get us away from charging lions with the same stress hormones activate today. They're locked and loaded today when we're stuck in traffic, you know, juggling emails or worrying about the bills. For example, the parasympathetic nervous system is the antidote to the stress response, fight or flight, sympathetic nervous system. And so one way to trigger parasympathetic activation is through long exhalations. If you just, for example, do three breaths in which the length of the exhalation is about twice as long or more than the inhalation, that'll stimulate the parasympathetic nervous system because it handles exhaling, and that'll immediately give you a benefit pulling the needle, you know, on your personal stress meter out of the red zone back into orange, yellow, maybe even some chartreuse or green. That's one thing. I think another thing is to really address the ways that, again, due to evolution, we're more fearful usually than we really need to be. Sure, we need to see real threats, but Mother Nature has given us a background trickle of anxiety, so we're always vigilant, even though most of the time, especially today, we don't have threats around us, certainly not like we did, you know, our ancestors did 100,000 years ago. So several of the practices in the book actually are about things like feeling safer or feeling cared about. Mental states become neural traits. In other words, the more that you activate these positive states of mind, the more you naturally start weaving them into the fabric of your own brain. Because in neuroscience, a famous saying to wrap up here is neurons that fire together wire together.
Well, this time of year certainly is a very emotional one. Some people become very happy. It's also a time where there's a lot of depression and sadness for some. How do emotions tie into this idea of calming or focusing the mind? Are they something to be generally avoided somehow?
No, I think, again, very consistent with a lot of science. You know, early on in the last century, or the middle of it, there was a lot of emphasis on thought. You know, there's a place for that. You know, how we view things, or including, you know, inner language, how we talk to ourselves. But the last 20 years has seen a lot of research on the primacy of emotion and body processing. So they're all important, but emotions really have an important role to play in coming to terms with our feelings. So, for example, I think, you know, some of the practices that I get into are how to deal with negative emotions and surround them with a kind of spacious awareness initially. One of the practices is be mindful, and then I go into how to do it based on how the brain works. But then after we've, you know, been aware of what we're feeling, then it's important to engage practices like I have around letting go, and then in particular, replacing that negative emotion with some kind of positive alternative. So, for example, if a person's depressed around the holidays because, you know, it's not going that well, or they feel lonely when other people seem so happy, one thing they can do, of course, is to practice self-compassion, one of the practices in the book, you know, not self-pity, but wish that oneself be not happy, or as another practice, feel cared about, you know, bring to mind times when you actually were cared about, even in situations that were not perfect.
I'm talking to Dr. Rick Hansen, neuropsychologist and the author of the new book, Just One Thing, Developing a Buddha Brain, One Simple Practice at a Time. So you mentioned taking deep breaths, and I have to admit, I've attempted that when I felt anxiety, and it hasn't been that effective. What are some of the most powerful ways to help calm the mind and kind of get control of things if things are out of control?
Yeah, I think with regard to the breath, the key is the exhalation. And sometimes people will take a deep breath, but they're actually really inhaling, and that's stimulating the stress response system. So the trick is to max out the exhalation, just as a detail. A couple other methods, relaxing the tongue. The parasympathetic nervous system handles a lot of digestion, and so digestion begins in the mouth. So if we relax the tongue or stimulate the mouth sometimes, that can help, you know, trigger the parasympathetic nervous system. Another is honestly to train in a little bit of training in bodily relaxation. You know, sitting in a chair or even listening to this program right now, can people just consciously notice what's tense and sort of soften and open around it? Can you relax what's right there? Another thing that's so important for relaxation and stress management is positive emotion. A little moment of gratitude, that's one of the 52 practices and Just One Thing, or a moment of gladness, another one of the practices.
I want to ask you about this younger generation. Many people will be with their families, with young relatives who will have their heads buried in their phones, constantly texting or tweeting or whatever it is they do. This phenomenon that seems to be completely dominating this generation of constantly being distracted, what do you think of it, and how harmful could it really be?
It's problematic. I think that, you know, my wife and I have two young adult kids, 24 and 21, and while it's interesting that using technology is a way for them to relate to their friends, and I think it's actually an important and significant one. That said, we evolved looking people in the eye and touching them with our hands, and that's the fundamental basis for human relationships. And so if we have electronic media crowding out, maybe the electronic media is not harmful in and of itself, but the problem is it crowds out potentially more intimate forms of contact. You know, hearing the voice of someone on the phone rather than reading this kind of telegraphic shorthand in a text. So I'm a little wary of a kind of, to use a psychology term, schizoidal quality to the culture these days, where people walk around, you know, plugged into their headphones, or, as you said, in restaurants or in family gatherings, you know, looking down at this little screen in their lap, where they're, you know, texting somebody else. And the consequence of that, I think, unfortunately, is to kind of drive people into their own caves.
Neuropsychologist Dr. Rick Hansen. Check out his new book, Just One Thing, Developing a Buddha Brain, One Simple Practice at a Time. Rick, thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, Mike, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
And we'll be right back with more. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.